Blog Talk Radio.
The hits just keep on coming.
Let's start the show. You know what time it is.
What up?
It's the Powerhouse Squad. The Powerhouse Squad.
It's the radio.
The Powerhouse Squad is in the house. With Tone Robbins.
Live and direct, man.
Koopy Afore.
Video. I am Hillsville.
And Brother Al.
Hey, what's up?
You know, it's not just the wisdom, it's the basis of understanding of the subject. The newest member to the Powerhouse Squad.
Sophia Alexandria.
Yeah. Let's try this again, all right? I'm going just growing remotely right now and just trying to keep it on. Can you hear me now?
Yes,
okay.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. All right. Hey, we are... Let's give ourselves a clapping round of applause because you know this is one for the record books. Oh God! So Sister Sophia, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good. How are you? How's it going?
Oh, you know they say the leader of the boat sinks with the boat. I'm on the boat sinking, but I know how to swim, so I'm not going to go that far down the road. All right, we had some special guests that were supposed to come on. Because the circumstances are beyond our control, we had some technical difficulties that occurred. We will still get into our subject. And keep it going. And, Brother Koopy will not be able to join us today. He has some urgent issues he had to take care of, you know, but, you know, a two-hitter is better than a no-hitter. How about that? Okay. So here's what we're doing. We're talking about the mask. We're, like I said before, and I try to reiterate this as much as possible, we all wear a mask when it comes to society or dealing with complex equations or issues. So when we try to deal with these issues, we're trying to be able to deal with them in the most abrupt and proper manner. So for that to occur, we have to be able to analyze these issues. Like right now, yes, I am frustrated right now, and with good reasons. We had a all-star lineup set up for today, and it did not go that way. So I put the mask on of happiness, even though frustration is running the show, okay? So, so we have to understand why we put these masks on. Well, is it for heirs, as some rich aristocrats would say? Why do we put these masks on our faces today? Okay, so, you know, we just got to be able to do it in a proper way so that we can be heard, we can be properly communicated or communicate with the person that we call or the people that we're trying to communicate with. These are the things that we have to constantly do. And because we have to, you know, take these roads or avenues to be properly heard, that, you know, we have to put these masks on or these facial expressions. People ask you, why? Why do I have to put the mask on? Why can't I just say, okay, I'm pissed off. I am mad as hell. Or I'm not in a good mood. I really don't feel like being here. I really don't feel like that emotion, like that true expression. So we put on, as like I said before, airs. Put on airs. We all heard that term, am I right? You know, put on airs. I truly believe in that we all put a mask on. Whether it's a mask to deal with the anger that we're feeling, we do not want to show it in front of our children. or we are dealing with a mask where we are dealing with a hardship or an emotional, okay? Like, okay, let's say somebody in your closest family passes away. Everybody in your family knows that you are the strong one, okay? And everybody knows that you, since you are the strong one in the family, you are expected to be the strong one, even though your emotions show, true emotions show otherwise. And because your true emotions show otherwise, you put on an air of happiness and strength when you really feel at your weakest. Okay? Some could say, even in being a, I watched a recent video, and this is one of our special guests is on, coming on with us. What has occurred is, you know, people, all right, I'm sort of like this. We have good cops, bad cops, okay? The good cop is somebody you can that can help. He might let you slide on a ticket or something. A bad cop will run you through, beat the heck out of you, have no consideration for your emotions, no consideration of you as a human being, and basically degrade you, okay? That one's just showing there's no mask here. There's no hiding of their emotions. It's there. It's just complete anger or disgust or you, racial tension or whatever the case may be. And because we put in these masks on, these putting these facial expressions on, we're not expressing our true nature, our true understanding. Okay? Now, some could even be, I could even bear with, you know, even another incident with myself. Where, you know, I go to TikTok or I go to these platforms and I'm not able to be able to get the good content out there. Like, maybe that's the issue, or I might be shadow banned or whatever the case may be. Now, I can whimper and cry about it, or I can keep putting content, pray to God or pray whoever I pray to, and hopefully things will change around. Or I can do plan A or plan B or plan C. I can formulate a plan. Remember, the, you know, what was A-Team, Hannibal used to say? I love it when a plan comes together, you know? And when the plan properly comes together, you're able to express yourself in a proper motion and able to keep that motion in check. Now, I see our brother Tone. Are you in the house?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I can even hear it, brother Tone. Please forgive me. Oh, man, please forgive me. Oh, man, that's where it is. You know, I'm not a technology savvy person. I am what they call a puzzle person. So forgive me for that. but how you doing, my brother?
I'm well. And you?
Man, I got the mask on. Which actually goes to coincide with we're dealing with right now.
You got your poker face on then, basically.
There he is. That's another one. The poker face.
Yeah.
Let's get into the poker face. Okay, I like that one. Okay, now the poker face. That's the most famous one that goes back to even the Western times. The guy sits there with the cards and he's there and he got a four or five. He got a, you know, full house. He's thinking the other guy might have maybe deuces, and somebody raises the stakes. Now, you can jump up and down, but you know in the bracket of your brain, you're like, yay, I'm going to win. Give me the money. But you really like what you got. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, what you got. We talk about these emotions, we talk about these feelings, and you know, we have to hide it for a reason. There's a reason. You have a goal, okay? We're going to keep that word into the conversation, the goal, okay? Now, listen, we got our main man just came into the, there you go, our brother, and right there. Is T. Nathan in the house?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Let's give a round of applause. Oh, my goodness. The man himself. It is it's the southern man. It's the brother man from the other land. Ooh, how you doing, my brother? Welcome to the Powerhouse Squad. We made,
Thank you. Let me tell you, I'm sorry about the little hiccup.
Listen, this is right on time though. This happening right on time because we're talking about the mask. You know, and as I previously talked to you in previous conversation, you know, the good cop is a good cop. He can't really be known too much, and the reason I say that is it's so so prominent right now is because I'm dealing with that here in I'm in the state of Maine, by the way. So,
okay. You're
you know,
in Maine?
I'm actually here. I'm the black dot on the white piece of paper. So
okay.
Yeah.
Period.
So So we got a brother up here also who's a cop. He's one of the only black officers out here, and I checked his ID, and his name is what it is. It's not a joke. His name is Eddie Murphy. I'm serious. His real name is Eddie Murphy. So he don't do the laugh.
That's delirious.
But he, you know, yeah.
that's raw too.
hey! I'm in a state where there's a town with my name on it called Alfred. So trust me, I know by ironic being here. And most people say I'm the wild and crazy one, but nah, not in Maine. I'm the normal one. Okay. Okay. So with this, Maine is a unique state. I mean, you got to understand when the governor who supported the governor that supported Trump was advocating for Trump was the governor of Maine.
Right.
And then when Trump was to be impeached the first time, the reason he didn't get impeached because the new governor, she decided, nah, he learned his lesson.
Right.
So, yeah, so you know, Maine is a unique state. And, yes, it does get cold up in here. And you got to wear your long johns. But, you know, it's a unique kind of retirement for my generation. So,
okay.
But anyway, like we're saying, now, teenager, listen, I'm going to tell you something. When you're dealing with these cops, now, I've been in Mississippi. I lived in Hattiesburg. I lived in Gulfport. I lived out in there, Biloxi. I used to go to the mosque in Biloxi up there. And then I believe it's the Island View, Island View Casino up there on the coast.
That's in Gulfport. Yeah, that's in Gulfport.
Yeah, from Gulfport. Yeah, and
you used to go to the mosque.
Yeah, I used to go to with brother
and
Tariq,
Tariq,
Imam
and
Tariq.
Tariq.
Yeah,
brother Tariq.
Yeah, and I used to I'll go out there and I lived out there. So I met a good couple of good cops on out there, a good people that's on there, in white and black. But, you know, some of them, you can see this look on their faces because they give you the look. And you have to really look at this look, right? And this is what people do not understand, how you can tell that somebody's putting a mask on, okay? If they got a bad cop next to them and they riding with them, and you sitting there like, yo, you know this is wrong. You know this is wrong, right? And they give you this look like a glance. Like I said earlier, that Ice Cube look almost. Like, you know, they can't tell you, listen, man, I know this is wrong. You know, me, my partner beating on this beepity 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 harassing this black person is wrong. And then, you know, first thing you come in, most black people face my generation because I think about Boys in the Hood. when that black cop comes up to the black kids and starts saying some stuff like, "What you looking at, boy?" You know, that kind of mentality, that kind of thing. And, you know, and it is hard. Now, take the situation I'm in. All right, because of when George Floyd hit up here, yeah, we protested. The streets protested. But the black community that is here, which probably normally is Somalian black, is would not respond to the police department. So I got calls because of my years in service in the nation, my years in service, you know, as a student minister in the Baptist churches, and years of services becoming a student imam, and working in the community as an activist, and being there and taking my vows at the Million Man March, Million Fan March, and so on and so forth. I got the call. So Maine needed somebody to step up. I stepped up. I went to the police department, sat down with the chief of the police, and I sat down with them. But here's the thing. Those police departments wanted black officers, but people in the black community do not want to be a police officer. They're scared to be a police officer because they know how the community will look at them if they take that position. And,
you put a – Brother Al, you put a lot on the table, and I would like to respond to some of it before we get too far away from it. Greetings, salutations, everybody else here also. My name is T. Nathan, and I haven't met you all, but I was reading up about this show. So thanks you all for having me here first.
Welcome.
You talk about several different things that have correlation, but they all basically find up that I don't care what we think is a good cop. When you have a system that was put in place as a slave catching system, the system itself is geared towards one thing, and it is corrupt. And you can't have a good cop in a corrupt system, and they turn their eyes or avert their face when something bad happens, because that does not make you a good cop. When you have people that are beating our people and these brothers, it's just like the video I just posted of Meridian that we've been following and doing the update on. There is no, if you are a good cop, you abide by protecting and serving, even if that is protecting and serving is from those you are working with. When you neglect to do that, you don't get to call yourself a good cop. I don't care what your beliefs are. It's on action. And when you deal with a system that was designed to catch runaway slaves and just evolved into the system we have today, then if you are a good cop, you have one of two choices. You are arresting or shooting those bad cops when they engage in activity that is criminal, or you are leaving the system. Because anything else means that system will grind you up and spit you out, and you have not accomplished anything for the community you say you join. Now, you said that we are afraid to join the police because we're afraid of how the community will look. We're afraid to join the police because how the police will look at us. It is about what they will do. There are several cases across the country where undercover black cops have been shot by their own police officers, and they want us to believe they didn't know that that person was on the police force working undercover. No, see, the system itself is corrupt. And until we dismantle it and build something to replace it, we're going to continue to have this same system. We can't fix this system because it is working the way it was designed to work. And we have to get around and get away from this kumbaya, looking for ways to make a system that was designed to oppress, enslave, and mistreat us and say we can fix it. No, it's not broke. It's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. And when we trick better people into becoming part of this system with the belief that they can change it, we are just sacrificing our best and our brightest to be grinded up by that system and spit out. So, yes, the police are going to look for, the departments are going to look for black faces to represent the department to the very communities they're over-policing. But we're not going to talk about over-policing, are we? Yes. We're not going to talk about the disproportionate traffic stops, disproportionate number of police in our community, and then want to blame us for all this crime. No, we can't fix that system. We must dismantle it. And anything else is just a pipe dream along this kumbaya moments we've been singing for the last 400 years and still getting the same things we've already got.
Darn straight, darn straight. I definitely agree with that because, you know, I mean, seriously, but you look at it. I mean, you look at it like when you talk about the undercover cops, I want to get into what you would talk about there. Now, I've seen that happen. Okay, and I didn't even know that they were undercover cops. Now, you know, in Gulfport, in the Red Dog District, there's got a place where Mr. Lee and them all had those shops at. And then you got near that school near going towards the hospital where they had that little grocery store over there, okay? All right, there was a sting done on me and the Brothers of the Nation. We were selling papers out there, and we were lifting the community. So we were selling the Final Call newspapers. So they didn't understand who the Nation was. We set up stings. We do our own.
No. They understood who the Nation is. Now, don't ever think that they don't. I've had too many talks with the chief police about the community. They know who everybody and what everything is of positive nature. And our advocates and our advocacies, the church members, they know who people are. And if they, they know who you are. They know who you are and what you represent.
Yeah, because they came at us because they thought it would be cool, right? The brother, you know, he had the Isla, it was like the scroll before the smartphone became the smartphone. He was scrolling on his little pad there. And I ain't stupid, and I've been training in Boston, so I was training for the brothers in Boston. So I come down here to help the brothers in Mississippi, and this brother is supposed to be his brother. And they got him undercover, and they had two marked cars come up, roll up on us, and we sitting there, you know, doing. Now me being me, you know, I'll expose you just like the fig leaf story. I'll take the fig leaf off you, Adam, and let me say you don't be, you know, don't hide behind that tree. I say, hey, yo, brother, you want to get this on Final Call newspaper, man? How about the community a little bit? He like, nah, I'm good. I said, all right, cool. I said, all right. So what department you from? He looked at me funny. He said, what are you talking about? I said, no. Have a good day. Here, bro. Give him the Final Call. Walked away. These people don't understand. Listen. And, you know, eventually they actually hired a specific cop while I was based in there, sitting there, from Boston to understand Boston mentality. And I never thought this was crazy. This was sort of weird. He just popped out of nowhere. And I understand how these people, they know who I am. They know what I do. I know what I did, too. I helped my people. And when people were in trouble, I came out there. If I had a lady who needed money and she couldn't pay her water bill, so I had like maybe 200 old Final Calls from 20 years ago. The brothers gave me out of New Orleans. They sent it to me, brought it over there in the truck. I took it, went to the corner, hit it out, and then got the $200-something or whatever the amount that was needed, and I gave it to the lady. You know, but they didn't like that. See, this is just the thing I have a problem with. With this system, you know, it's like they're tell you that what they're truly trying to do to you, but they at the same time they put a mask on, like we care about you, but we don't care about you. And to quote the minister, Ms. Farrakhan once said, he said, you know what, we have to pick the lesser of evils when it comes to dealing with certain issues, and I picked the lesser evil even when it came to voting. Okay, when it came to voting, yes, I know about Joe Biden's indiscretions and issues. I know about Kamala Harris's issues and situations. But see, there's a door that needs to be open, and there's one door that needs to be closed. And if we don't close that other door and open the right door, then guess what? That right door will never be open. So, you know what I'm saying? So we had to pick what we had to do, and when it came to issues like that, you know, we picked it. We made up the decision, and we said enough of this door, enough of this situation, and we have to go and come around and do something a little bit different. You know what I'm saying? So this is how our society and system is set up.
That's how we allow it to be. Yeah, I hear that lesser of two evils argument all the time, right? And as long as we keep picking the lesser of two evils voluntarily, we're going to keep treating the same things we've always got. We've been picking the lesser of two evils ever since we've been a part of the political system in this country. And we are continually getting to election after election, and then we're sitting here looking at each other talking about the lesser of two evils. We got 4 years to plan for the next election, and we're spending too much time talking about what this election was about instead of what the next one is about. And as long as we do that, we're going to keep having the lesser of two evils argument. All honor be to the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, but at the end of the day, this is not about what has not worked in the past anymore. That's what I tell people. We have a road map of what has not worked. We need to step off that road and start forging our way into that wilderness or into that jungle that we are scared to go into because we are fearful of what might be there. But we know what's here, and what's here is killing us. And if we continue to take this philosophy instead of creating, we come from people that create. I'm not a creation of Western civilization. My grandmother was a Shanta. I know my history. I know where my lineage starts and ends, and it ends and starts in Ghana. So I tell people, we have allowed this idealism to seep into us because it was fostered, and we believe in it because at the end of the day, it makes it somewhat easier and palatable. Telling people that you continue to accept this and the system is going to continue to give this. We'll stop thinking that this is going to somehow lead somewhere that it's not. It's like we say we are voting for the lesser of two evils, and then when that lesser evil, quote unquote, does something evil, we're surprised. Excuse me, they were evil. We knew that to go in. Yes, I didn't agree with you. We didn't vote for Joseph Biden. We voted against Donald Trump. But if we're going to continue to allow these for and against moments to continue to evolve, then we're going to find ourselves, because we're not voting on the local level. All politics, as a political science doctor, I would tell you, all politics is local. We're not voting for mayors. We're going to turn around every 4 years and we want to vote for a president and miraculously think they're going to wave some magic wand and everything is going to get better. No, our problems are systemic. Systemic.
Hmm.
It is the system itself that we must be addressing on every level. Economic, our educational growth, all that. And I'm going to tell you, we'll run around here with these capitalistic idealism, and people be like, oh, we just need to raise money and have better communities. Money has never saved us. Money in and of itself has never saved us. We had many communities of affluent black people in the past. And when racism got ready, they came into our communities and burnt them to the ground because we don't have the right, we don't have the ability to protect that which we gather. And until we work on that, nothing we gather up will be protected. It will always be at the mercy of white supremacists and racists. And they don't have to have an excuse. They're just tired of us. Look at Wilmington, North Carolina. Black elected local government overnight. Ran out the
Yep.
Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
Tulsa.
Woo!
Rosewood. You know, we have a history of what has not worked. And I want us to stop talking about it like all we need is a couple of more millionaires. No, we need a societal shift that starts with us that says no more. Fannie Lou Hamer said over 70 years ago, we were sick and tired of being sick and tired. Why are we still tired? Because we're not willing to do the things it takes. We're sitting here talking about a police system and good cops. What does that matter? Mm. There's still dead black people. And no one is stepping up and we're having hashtag moments on social media every time. I'm not doing another hashtag. Another hashtag. Because all that doesn't seem like it just gives us something to do without getting anything done. No, we have to make it so that I tell people, if we go back to the origins of the Klan, The Klan was put in place to intimidate and bring fear to us. That was the whole purpose. And so when you get to the bottom line, now we're dealing with the fallout of implicit racism and biases. There's no fear. Cops are killing us because they're just going to get administrative leave and go work for another police department, even if they get fired, because nobody's going to trial and finding them guilty. Who's going to motivate it to do better? Yeah, we need to stop having these conversations that are delusional in their thinking, because we're selling these conversations to the youth of today, and they're believing that this is. See, I tell you, racism has evolved, and we are still fighting the same way we were fighting in 1965. You
That's
know,
right.
We just celebrated the
That's
56th
right.
anniversary of John Lewis getting his head busted on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma. And why was he there?
Mm-hmm.
I was asking somebody about the march in Selma, and I was like, why were they marching? People didn't even know why they were marching. I'm talking about black people. They didn't even know what they were marching for. They just know they always talking about Selma. They always talking about it. But they don't understand. They were marching because the previous year, 1964, the Voters' Rights Act had passed, and we were supposed to be enjoying equity and equality in our voting rights. The South refused to acknowledge it. Refused to acknowledge it. And here today, the day after that anniversary, what's happening across the country? All these southern states introducing these bills to restrict voting rights. We're fighting the same damn fight we were fighting 56 years ago, and I got people telling me, have the nerve to tell me, move on. How can I move on?
What?
That's the sad point. I'm not trying to live in 1965. I'm living in 2021 fighting the same issues we were fighting.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I've been saying. And we have to – I have to look at this. Okay, this is what I've been noticing too. Every person – and I coined the term hair trigger, okay? Every person or organization in our community that has pulled that trigger, that hair trigger, has – got great opposition against them when they pulled it. The Panthers pulled the trigger and said, you know what, enough is enough. We're going to get out of here. And opposition came to them. Our communities and other organizations, even came along. And then every people that I've seen that said, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm not going to sit around here. Enough is enough. Stop talking. Let's get up here. And I'm not going to just sit here and not talk about it. I'm not going to stop. I'm dumb talking about it. I'm going to do something. Okay? So, like you said, we had Wall Street, Black Wall Street issue. We had we started the WIC program. The community started. Even we're talking illegal. The lottery. The whole purpose of the lottery is to give black folks a chance and an opportunity to change their condition. Yes, it was illegal. It was uncoded, and the numbers game was then. But you know what? That little extra $20 back then, shoot, that was enough to feed your belly for at least 2 weeks, Lynn. Come on. So if I hit the number that week, shoot, I can go down here into Mr. Johnson's grocery store and take that damn money, and I can feed my family for a little bit, while even though I'm still working. But you know what? You take that away from us, and opposition came with it. And those who are, I'm not going to say white, but I say those outside of our community, felt, and they want to these black folk, these Negroes, we gonna take them, and we ain't going to like that. We don't like that they can think. We don't like that they can change their condition. Why didn't we think about that? You know what I'm saying? And I'm even going to take something done from you, TNA, that you put out there. Yeah. When you said the video, 85% of businesses are white owned. We are in that small 10 to 1% margin. Because you look at the way our system is set up. And anytime a black business is open, I've opened a couple businesses. I had a business in Mississippi, and whites didn't like that I came up with this brilliant idea to help people. So they suppressed it. $9,000 in the hole. Boom. Okay? These kind of things kept on happening to the point that, you know what, you're like, all right, what am I supposed to do? Then someone tells you, guess what, you got to buy more volume. I don't have volume. I don't have $20,000 set up to buy four grand worth of products or a big, large amount of products so I can sell them with against my competitor. So black people, when they open businesses, their prices have always been high. From the time I grew up, when I learned to be self-aware of my black dollar, where my money's going, okay? And I sat there, and I went in there, I said, okay, hey, listen, brother, how much is for that toothpaste? $12. I said, what? $12? And the same toothpaste that I get from the brother, I can go to the white store, and he got it for $2. And I said, okay, somebody explain to me how is this going on. And then somebody with an economics major explained it to me. He said, it's the units. It's the unit cost. The more you buy, the lower your wholesale cost goes. And then the lower your wholesale cost is, the lower you can put your price down. So we can't even, most blacks at that time, when I was looking at this, they couldn't even buy a product, you know, in big bulk. So when I did try to open up my own business or anything, we sit there and you still can't compete because guess what? They slicing prices and they're cutting through other avenues. You see, it's economics suppression, racism through economics. It's racist through housing. It's racist through anything, even through the clothing industry. Anytime blacks develop sneakers, we can't seem to buy it. I remember when I think 7 years ago, there was a big new sneaker company, Nagaz.
Brother Alfred.
Yeah.
Brother Alfred. I understand, right? I get it. But you bring up so many points at one time that you bring up so many points at one time. And I want to address some of those, but you're not leaving me much time to address them. Because I want to ask Queen Sophia, are you here?
Yes, I am.
Tone, you here? Okay. Tone, you here?
Tone.
Okay. I want Queen. Let's talk about.
Let's talk about beauty care products.
All right. Let's talk about beauty care products, and I'm going to round it back to what you're talking about, Brother Alfred. But Queen, let's talk about your. Let's talk about your weekly regimen of healthcare, of beauty care products. What do you like? Do you find what you like over the counter and predominantly white businesses?
Yeah, I agree with that.
So you find what you like at predominantly white businesses?
Yes.
Why?
I do.
If you could find that very product at a black business, would you use it?
Yes, and I actually love supporting black people, but it is a difference, as Alfred mentioned, and there's a lot of things
right.
that go into that, yeah.
Right, because we talk about unit price. So number one, let's stop making white racist problems our problem, okay? We are creators and solution solvers. So if I have this queen and she's telling me what she likes, then not only is it incumbent on me to get the product she likes at the price she likes, it's incumbent on our communities to support me as I do it. Okay? So you understand, and you said you lived in Biloxi, right? You understand Biloxi prior to segregation was one of the richest areas of black influence in the country because it had an area that was, because of segregation, we circulated our dollars in our communities. That Main Street area used to be Biloxi Blues. There's a movie called Biloxi Blues, right? And if you ever watch that movie, you will see that at that time of segregation, that's where even the airmen off base wanted to come for the music. They wanted to come there. There was a theater on Main Street. There were shoe companies. There were all kinds of stores because we were segregated by government ordinance, right? So what I'm saying is that once we have to realize this problem is not just about black ownership of a business. It's about black patronage of that business. That's why I say we need a mindset, because segregation didn't end because people thought we were equal. Segregation took a backseat to our dollars. So we need to reinvest our dollars in our community. These are the things I tell you. We are so hyped on why white people are racist, instead of saying, forget why white people are racist, why aren't we developing our communities to withstand the assault that white racists will eventually bring? And that requires us to understand that we need to reinvest in our communities. I mean, I find myself buying property in our communities to stop white investors from coming into our communities and gentrifying them and then raising the prices and then moving us out. And, you know, so if they think our communities are valuable, we need to see that value and start to invest in it and grow those communities ourselves. Continue to talk about the and don't get me wrong, I talk about the history of racism and I talk about the effects of racism, but we're still here. Since 1619, we're still here, but we've just been surviving. It's time we learned how to thrive in spite of, and then we will learn how to fight more efficiently. I'm all about the evolution of ourselves to learn to fight the threats that are coming in the manner in which they are coming. We cannot continue the marches. We cannot continue the kumbaya moments. We cannot continue to turn the other cheek. As long as we do that and they're fighting on a whole other digital platform that didn't exist in 1965, we're losing. We're losing. See, we need to understand we need to evolve our mental state and our spiritual state back to a point where we thrived, back to a point where we understood and acceptance. That's why I teach history so much to these young people. It's because you, like Dr. Carter G. Woodson teaches us, if you don't know who you are, you'll let anybody tell you. If you don't know where you came from and the greatness that you come from, you will think you all have a history of nothing but being slaves. And that is, no one kidnapped slaves from Africa. I want people to stop that narrative. We were enslaved. We were not, there was no slaves. We were enslaved. They took lawyers. They took the, not lawyers, they took the doctors. They took our mathematicians. They took them and turned them into field hands. So if that's where we come from, that's what we can get back to. And we need to know we can get back there in spite of. We spend so much time talking about what is done to us, then not enough time of what we are going to do to it. And like I say, these conversations, racists don't mind being talked about. They don't care. That's who they are. Because as long as we're just talking about them and not doing anything about them, we're no threat. We're no threat. I don't spend my time on social media talking about this just to hear myself talk, because I'm in the real world doing things that have output. But I'm inspiring people to realize that we have to do more for ourselves. Mm. Like I say, there's no N-word pass around me. I'm busting you in your face. Point blank.
Yeah.
And then if you tell me your black friend told you to say it, I'm busting him in his face too. See, we got to start letting people know there are consequences to their BS behavior. If there are no, we accept these apologies because black people are so ingrained with forgiveness and forgetting. Amber Geyer, right now, while we're focusing on the Derek Chauvin case at the murder of George Floyd, Amber Geyer's attorneys have got an appeal, and she's going to court on April 27th to try to get her sentence reduced by getting the charges reduced to criminal negligent homicide, which carries 180 days or 2 years. But we're not focusing. We act like we can't walk and chew bubblegum at the same time. We act like we can't pay attention to the Derek Chauvin case and pay attention to Amber Geyer. Just like people were in my comment section saying, well, this happened 2 years ago. Yeah, it happened 2 years ago. And I've been keeping up with it because he didn't get any time. He didn't get a sentence. He didn't get a charge. So what happened? All he get is this reprimand in his file, and he can go work at any other police department in the country, because the police union gonna say, hey, he only has one reprimand. Forget if it's for assaulting a suspect. If any of us did that, we would be in jail facing assault charges. But we have to stop this forgiving and forgetting. Amber Guyer was hugged by Bottom John's brother in an open courtroom. And that is what black people have been expected to do since we have been beaten. We're expected to forgive our abusers, and not only forgive them, but embrace them. I'm going to tell you all, if you all ever see me going near somebody who has abused me and you think I'm going to give them a hug, y'all better act like Suge Avery in The Color Purple and say he's about to save Mister and start doing some running, because there's nothing nice about to happen with that blade. I'm telling you, we have to stop doing this. We have to stop looking for these reasons. Don't get me wrong. We as black people are compassionate. But when that compassion starts getting away of our lives, we need to reserve that compassion for those who are entitled to it. It's like you say, render unto our enemies that which our enemies would render unto us. I'm not. People told me, oh, don't fight fire with fire. I don't. I fight it with napalm. I'm telling you, we spend too much time trying to figure out why people slapping us than breaking their arm. No, you don't get. I don't care why you were slapping me. I'm going to break your arm. And you don't get to tell me my response is disproportionate, because you could have kept your hands off me.
See, that's why I say I believe that. I mean, you know, in fact, I think, Tone, I think we talked about something like that before, didn't we? We was talking about that before, something along that line, in one of our conversations. You know, and I just feel that, you know, we this is a gut wrenching for me, and it's on a personal level, because, you know, I have to look at it and say, guess what? How do I move on from this day, or should I just move on? Should I just keep the mask on and just keep moving on, act like something, you know, as they used to say, shucking and jiving? No, I don't feel like I should do it. But because of the natural fear that's been embedded to me over the years. If I do
these
are the consequences.
That fear ain't getting me nowhere. No, it's getting
you. It gets me like a small steps, but it ain't getting me where I want to go. Yeah, I mean, seriously.
That's the thing. If it's not getting you where you want to go, then it's counterproductive. I understand the conversation was about mask wearing, but that's a Western civilization concept. Wearing masks, they act like it's Halloween, and we putting on. No, we're not a mask wearing at a masquerade party is something totally different than to put. We're not wearing masks. We're wearing whole skins.
Ooh.
And we're doing it because we believe that it's saving our lives. But don't you know there are things much worse than death? And we have been enduring them.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
the thing. I think that we need to learn. We've been wearing masks and whole skins for so long, we have forgotten who we are.
Yeah.
That's
right.
The problem with
yeah.
this is that we forget who we were, who we come from. You understand? And I know all of us here got a grandmother who had to walk to school, and they have told us how they had to walk to school, through snow, through whatever. And we sit here complaining that somebody called us the N-word online and want to have a mental breakdown. No, I don't want to hear that. I'm so tired of people getting on social media and talking about they're being bullied and they're crying about, oh, they called me this and they called me that. If you're that concerned about it, hunt them down and beat their butt. That's what you do. But don't come on social media telling me somebody hurt your feelings when my grandparents had to endure being spit on in person. We have got to start understanding that we need to take some of this other people's skin off and get to the skin we live in.
Yeah.
And we have to understand that we are stronger together than apart. And we have to understand that until we have these hard conversations with ourselves, and with those who are not just skin folks, but kin folks, then we're going to continue to get the same thing we already got. Who's afraid? I'm not afraid of anybody coming to my house dressed as a vampire. I'm not afraid of you. You dressed up as a vampire. I'm going to tell you what you need to be afraid of. You need to be afraid if I pull this skin off what I am under here, because I'm a descendant of God. My relatives were called royalty.
Right.
And that's why we, even during Black History Month, I tell people, number one, I hate Black History Month, not because of what it should represent, but because of what we have allowed it to represent. This was not the idea of the founder, Dr. Carter G. Woodson. This wasn't his idea. Our history runs all the time. And then you get this condensation, and we allow it because we don't talk about our own history anytime outside of February. No, you better remember that our history did not start in 1619 and it's not going to end tomorrow. And we need to act like it. We need to act like it. We need to take off this skin and show the skin of the blackness under it and wear it unapologetically. See, we are making apologies for being black.
Unapologetically.
That's what the skins we wear and the masks we wear means. We mean we don't like our blackness because it's too raw for us. No, I stand in mine all the time, butt naked. I'm black. I'm black 24/7 all the time. I'm looking out, and I'm not. And see, we have been taught that being pro-black means being anti-white. I hate to break it to you all. I'm so pro-black, I don't think about you all until you come into my presence with your BS. Once you come into my presence with your BS, I have to straighten you. My blackness is not about you not succeeding. My blackness is about you not going to step on my back to do it.
Yeah. So I want to say thank you, T, man. I appreciate you coming on, man. It's been a great show with you, brother. Let me tell you something. Man, you are the coolest. What's that guy you say? You the coolest cat I've ever met from way back. So,
thank you.
So let's give him a round of hot power squad.
I'm humbled and honored.
Woo.
Yeah.
Thank you. For coming on.
Thank you for having me. And I am not the one. I am just the messenger of the ancestors. I don't care. The ancestors just speak through me. This is not about glorifying the messenger. It's about listening to the ancestors because they have done this before and they know what we need to do. And I appreciate y'all having me here. I'm gonna let y'all close out and invite me anytime I have the time. I'd love to come on and talk to y'all.
And on behalf of Kofi, I know he wouldn't want to be here, but you know he's got tied up in some other obligations. So, you know,
He always died.
Yeah, so, that's Brother Kofi, man. But, you know, we want to say thank you.
I want to hear more from the Queen and Tone, right? Yeah. Okay, Brother Alfred.
I know. You know, a little celebrity starstruck.
Peace out to y'all. Have a beautiful day, my brothers and sisters.
All right. Hey, everybody. All right. Hey, Brother Tone, man. Trust me, that brother, I remember first time I met him, man. You know, y'all, let me tell y'all about this. I was sitting there, and I just got on TikTok, it's 3 weeks in, and I get this video pops up. And it's talking about N-word passes. And I'm like, hold on, this can't be real. So he said, go to eBay, type in N-word passes, and sure enough, it was there. So I'm still in my young stage. I'm still talking, and then get there. I said, let me go and see if this thing is real. So I just like, oh, God, I couldn't believe it. So I became a little bit of a fan. But I said, all right, this brother, he probably so high up there, he probably got Michael Jackson's phone number. So I said, when he called back, I said, listen, man, let's come on the show. He's like, okay, let's go. So I was like, oh, God. So, You know, I appreciate it. You know, I just said, okay, I was so shocked. And I was like, all right, so he came on. I was like, oh, wow, all right, okay. A little starstruck. So I appreciate everybody being patient with me a little bit. You know, we're working on it, you know. So everybody out there, but I do want to give a shout out to everybody in Russia and Asia that's starting to tune into us a little bit. And we want to give a shout out to Canada. That's we want to say thank you for starting listening a little bit more. So I noticed that we're starting to get a more feedback and from Canada. So appreciate you all, eh? And and keep, yeah. So beyond that, please, when you get a chance, go to nsfradiostations.com. Click on Sister Sophia's link. Go to her website. Please check it out. And check out Brother Tone. Click on it where it says click here. And follow Brother Tone. He's out there. Man, he's got some great content as well. One of his other shows as well. And please, we want to let you know that we support you. We love you all and everything. And next week, listen, we're going to try to make it as a family affair. If we can bring our family on or try to figure out what we're going to do next week. But we'll let you stay tuned and keep in news. And if you want to know more about, like I said, go to nsfradiostation.com. We are live right there. We always keep you updated schedule. And, hey, if you would like to book us for a special show or something like that, please give us a touch and reach out for us. And I'm sure we'd be glad to set up arrangements with us, all right? My name is Brother Alfred. Sister Tone, sister is in the house. Brother Tone is in the house. And Brother Kofi will be back with us next week. Huh? All right. So with that being said, the Powerhouse Squad, we appreciate you and see you next week. Oh, God.
You know what, Tommy?
What up? It's the Powerhouse Squad. The Powerhouse Squad.
The Powerhouse Squad. The Wisdom has left the house. Tone Robbins.
Live and direct.
Kofi Afore.
Video. I am Hills Kofi Afore.
And Brother Al.
Hey, what's up?
You know, it's not just the wisdom. It's the basis of understanding of the subject. The newest member to the Powerhouse Squad.
Sophia Alexandria.
The Power Squad has gone home. See you, folks.